know, still people thinking that, you know, this is not a sport where you can make it as a gay man, for example, then, you know, we just have to prove them wrong. And that doesn't happen by itself. You know, we have to, you know, the world has changed because people have come out public.
And welcome back to the Outfield Podcast, episode 32. It's been a few months again, I apologize. But this show is definitely worth the wait. It's a guest I've wanted to have on this show for years, actually, since I started doing it. You may not have heard his story, but if you haven't, I hope you get introduced to this man today, because he is one of the few out current or former hockey players, and people who have listened to the show know how much that matters to me. He's played in the QMJHL, he's played professionally in Finland, Jani Puhakka. Welcome to the show, my friend. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. Doing pretty well. Summer is in Finland. Weather has been quite okay, and yeah, a lot of things to do, and we got a small puppy, so that keeps us busy.
I would say summer in Finland sounds awesome. It's better than the humidity where I am.
We usually have pretty, how to say, not hot summers, or it depends what you compare it to, but yeah, it's pretty nice. We have a lot of lakes. The air here is very clean, and nature is quite flat, but still you can, you know, enjoy the pretty views. And a lot of places are by the sea, so that's also very nice.
That sounds much better than 95 degrees Fahrenheit and humid, which happens quite a bit. But regardless, firstly, I have to ask, I know I've followed your story since you came out a few years ago. Is this the first one of these shows you've done in English?
Actually, in English, yes.
I've seen you do a bunch in Finnish, and as people will understand, I'm going to mention a lot of this today. There's a lot of good stuff you've done that I cannot possibly understand because I don't speak Finnish. However, if you have followed me and my work, you know I also do a general hockey podcast called Why Hockey, and this is probably the best crossover of two of my great interests in the sport that I've ever done. Out people in hockey and Finnish hockey. It's perfect.
Yeah.
It's wonderful, as people know from that show. We cover the Florida Panthers. I think they have one or two connections to the country of Finland.
We have Lundell and we have Barkov, at least.
And two more.
Tuomarutu is one.
Well, he's on the bench, yes. Oh, Bill Zito, of course, had.
Etu Luostarinen is there. Yep.
Just signed Nico Mikkola on Saturday.
Yeah. He got traded. That's right.
So we are big fans over Y Hockey, the country of Finland. Huge fans.
Yeah. Well, you got probably the best one in your team. So.
I would say. As much as I would love to have this show be talking about Alexander Barkov all the time, that's not what you're here for. For those people, Jani, who don't know all that much about your story, because it's one that I would like more people to know about. Tell everybody a little about yourself.
Well, at the moment, I'm 28 years old. I live with my Norwegian partner. His name is Rolf. We've been together for 9 years, actually this past June. And my story sort of from the hockey point of view is that I started when I was 5 years old, and we still have a debate until this day with my dad, like how it started. But I have this story that I brought this sort of like a note that they gave us in the kindergarten, and said that I want to start playing hockey, and that's how I remember it got started. And I finished my career in 2017-18. Played 3 years professionally, and before that I played junior hockey in Canada. So in Finland it works so that you sort of pick your junior team, and then there's the national team starting at 16. So I went through all those, and then you are slowly turning into professional. And and nowadays I'm still a student, and working with social media as an entrepreneur, and then I also have my daily job.
So I want to get your, well, it's Finland, so there's obviously a lot of interest in hockey in Finland, but do you remember what interested you in not just liking hockey, but playing it when you were that young?
I guess it's quite, because it's so popular, it's easy to get interested in because it's shown on TV and stuff like that. So, but I feel like for me, it was more that I was put on skates and it felt relatively easy right away. So then I wanted to get a chance in a team, and I also started playing soccer at the same time. So I always think it's good for kids to do some sports, and then when you come or become a little older, you sort of realize that, okay, I can do this, and then you start at some point thinking that, okay, maybe this could be something that I could do for a longer time.
Do you have that moment where you realize that you were pretty good at hockey?
I would say when, you know, your age group is sort of starting to fight for the national team spots, and I was there for all the youth years, then I sort of felt like, you know, now I'm doing something right and I'm getting noticed. So then you sort of realize that I cannot say that I felt like I was better than everybody else, but you feel like, you know, I'm at least on the better side and doing something right. So
so how many players that you played with would the general hockey fan might recognize, because you're, as you said, you're 28, so you would have played with some players perhaps who are either in the league right now or have been around or played in Finland. Are there anybody out there that you played with whose names people would recognize?
You mean in the NHL?
In the NHL, but even then, like, people might recognize some who have played in the league and have gone back over to Finland. You know, I'm a hockey nerd, so I might recognize a fair few of them.
Yeah, I played with a lot of guys, but to start with, well, Barkov is probably the best. Then I played actually quite a lot with Arturi Lehkonen in the...
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In Colorado, then with Mick Rantanen, he was also, he's 1 year younger, but still. And then recent Stanley Cup champion, Nicolas Roy, he's from Quebec. And then you have Charles Houdon, Laurent Dauphin. So it's a big list of names who've done it quite well. And then a lot of goalies, Juuse Saros, he was there, Kevin Lankinen, Ville Husso. So yeah, it's a
you've
long
named
list.
A lot of it's a lot of names.
Yeah,
it's not bad.
No, it's funny how you start from the same line, and then you see some people, they just well, for players like Barkov, you see it from the day one. Basically, you see that he's phenomenal and he's better than everybody else, but from some other players you cannot tell, and then suddenly, you know, things click and they always make it to the next level. And for example, Mikko Rantanen, he's probably one of the best in the world right now, but if you asked me when he was 13, it would have been hard to say or guess. Well,
sometimes it's fascinating. I've talked with people who have actually played against people who are in the league right now. And there's the difference between, as you said, the ones who you know instantly that are going to be like, all right, they're going to be in the league eventually. And then there are the ones that grow later. It's always fascinating to hear about that, because you don't hear about the player's development at that young of an age. It just happens to be later, you know, when you start to see it pretty quickly.
Yes.
Well, you also got to play with a generation of insanely good Finnish players too.
Yeah, it's you know, people might ask you what makes the difference and so on. It's very hard to pinpoint. You know, it always comes down to the hard work, but obviously you need to have some pure talent as well, and then it's also a lot about the mental stuff, and then also you. It would be wrong to say that you don't need any luck. So, you know, that's also part of the game.
It's a lot of these Finnish players have gotten incredibly lucky with where they've gone. And well, some of them, as you said, a couple of them won a Stanley Cup. Another made the Stanley Cup final. That was pretty awesome, I have to say.
Yeah.
I mean, as somebody who has watched I'm going to try to not do too sidetracked on the Finnish hockey thing here, but I have to mention it while I'm here. It's just as somebody who's watched Alexander Barkov now for a decade with Florida, and to see him finally get that moment was just awesome.
Yeah.
He deserved, just covering it, knowing people have known him, just he deserved it more than almost anybody else on that team. And a lot of people on that team deserved it, but he deserved it most.
Yeah, I think he deserves to win the whole thing at some point.
I hope it. It was so close, but I can. And a lot of people who are going to listen to this, Panthers connections, hopefully are going to be like, yeah, no, you're right. He should win it.
Yeah.
Oh, what an incredible hockey player he is. Just truly insane. Yeah. He does things every night I watch where you go, that's wild. How is somebody able to do that? Anyway, you're here because you're one of the few current or former out gay players in hockey. And I have to ask, at what point did you start to notice that you're not the same as everybody else who's playing hockey?
Probably like for most people, it's probably when you're a teenager. You sort of start to grow physically, and I don't know if it's mental growing as well, but you start to feel that you pay attention to different things. And I guess that was the same for me. And then, you know, it was for me also, so that, you know, I didn't know if it's just normal as a teenager sort of to feel different things. And, you know, and then I was obviously trying to find my path and who am I? And especially in the hockey world, you know, it's like, it's a sort of like a environment where you grow up and everybody's kind of looking the same, acting the same way, talking the same way. So I felt like I had to be the same way. And then I ended up being with women because that was the, you know, where you should be and how you got credit from your teammates. But deep inside me, I knew that that wasn't me. And then at some point started sort of living my true self.
So I have to ask then, because we know what hockey culture is like in North America, that's been well documented, but we don't really get a window into what it's like in other countries. And as you're talking about with Finland, it seems very similar to the hockey culture in North America. What you were describing did not need the Finnish language to translate, because it sounded almost exactly the same.
Yeah, I feel like I played, you know, in Canada and in France, and also travel a lot because of hockey. And then it seems pretty similar. I would say when it comes to differences, it's more in the, call it, fan base or small gestures. Like in France, you know, you had to greet everyone separately every morning. But in a bigger picture, I feel like the hockey culture is very similar no matter where you go. So
how difficult was it for you? You know you have a possible path to a high level in the sport, and yet at some point you're also having to start to do this. How did that feel for you? You know, to start to hide what you knew deep down might have been true, but you had to keep appearances up.
For me, the difficult part came when I met my current partner. Because at the time when I was sort of alone, I felt it affected me more mentally, that I couldn't be myself, but then it was easier to hide and, you know, just sort of fake stories about who you are and stuff like that. But then when I met someone that I really cared for, I sort of had two different lives. That I had the hockey life. And then when I closed that door, I started living my own life, and that eventually became very heavy. So that's also why I've spoken openly about this topic, because, you know, I feel like no one should have to deal with things like that. And I also feel like brain is a big muscle, and when you have something you have to carry on there, it's also, you know, affecting you on the ice and how you might perform. You know, we're all individuals, so for some people maybe mental part is a smaller factor, but for some people it's really big. So it's like goes, I don't want to compare it to depression or something like that, but it's I feel it functions a little the same way. You know, if you have things you have to carry on, then you may not perform as well. So having two lives for me was very, very difficult.
I don't know how you can function when you have to turn one side of you off completely. When you go home and then go to work.
Yeah, and then that's why I also I've spoken to different or in different companies, and I try to explain the same thing, you know, to change the working culture we have, that no matter what company you're working for, if somebody can't be themselves, you know, the level they're performing at is not the same as if they can be themselves and feel safe. So it's the same in sports, and people I've talked with who are maybe still closeted and so on, you know, they're struggling still. So then it's just the question, what's the reason why they can't come out? And there's still a lot of money involved and a lot of pressure, so it's not easy. And it was the same for me when I was younger. You know, I was always looking for someone that I could sort of relate to, but there was no one. So then you don't sort of you have all these question marks in your head. If I speak openly about this, what will happen? Will it affect on the contracts and so on? Because it's still like NHL just proved it, that they're still sort of on the,
yeah,
this is too much to say, but on the conservative side, or I don't know how I should put it, but you know, like taking off the rainbow jerseys for me was a big disappointment.
Don't worry, it was a disappointment for a lot of people too. And I wanted to focus on the good stuff, you and what you've done and the things that are positive more than the negative. But since this is the first podcast I've kind of recorded since all of that went down.
Yeah.
No, it's very, very stupid in a very NHL way. Now there has been progress made, but I can talk about this more at other places, but a lot of it was sort of forced upon them. They did what they were told to do. Yeah. I'll say that. And I think that there is positivity in movement, but you have to work extra hard in hockey to get it to move in the right direction, more than even in other sports, because of what hockey is. And I want to get to your experiences, because you did play in the QMJHL about a decade ago now. Chikuimi, you mentioned a couple of players you played with. Want to know what that's like, because if you've heard anything about junior hockey stories, you've heard a lot of them from the Q particularly. Some would say it's like the Wild West out there. Again, you're 16, 17, and you're going into this environment, not only in a new country, but also in the position we've talked about. So what was that experience like for you, not just leaving Finland, but going to play in this particular environment? Because it feels like a decade ago, isn't that long ago, but when it comes to this, a decade ago is a long time ago.
Yeah, well, for me personally, the first year was very exciting, because, you know, it was after the Junior World Championships we have had in Sochi. And then I was talking with my agent and thinking about places where to play next. And then this possibility to play in Canada came up, and it had sort of been something I thought about. So when they drafted me, I said, I really want to go there. And the first year I sort of felt I was, you know, it was pure excitement. And I also played very well. But the life there is sort of, you know, I was put into a French family, very lovely family, older couple. They were both retired. So they had sort of a lot of time for me and cooking and all that stuff. So that was very nice, but the downside of it was that, you know, I basically lived in the basement of the house, and there when I was alone, I was literally I was alone and alone with my thoughts. And then also you have your teammates there, but I never really felt like, okay, these are, you know, very close people to me because they were mostly French. And so then I was also having the fight inside of my head, you know, is this the life that I want to live? And even if it was, but at the same time, I was thinking, is this what I want to do? And so on. And the second year when I went back, I had already met my partner. We were not like together, but then I would say I was even more alone with my thoughts and, you know, trying to figure out who I am and so on.
What did you hear during that point in terms of, like, you talked about this in some of the stories that I've seen, the language you heard, the comments you heard? And that was just in Finland. What about there?
As I said, you know, the hockey culture is very similar in every dressing room. So the joking that's in the locker room, it's very funny. And like, I don't want to say it's all, call it poisonous and very bad, but I would say it's very ruthless and there is no limits. So that can be, you know, people, they don't really think what they say and what might be the meaning or what it might cause to someone, you know. It may not even be personal, but, you know, you say things and people hear it and, you know, it affects people differently. So you never know. So for me, it was like, if there was some gay joking around, I might go along, you know, because I didn't want anyone to sort of suspect anything or things like that. So in that sense, it's, as I said, it's hard to be yourself.
Really hard, especially when not only are you dealing with this, as you said, in your second year, you had already met your partner. So that added even more to it, but also you're just trying to fit in because you're a Finnish player in the Quebec League on a team of mostly people from Quebec. So that made it probably even tougher. There's not only the adjustment of dealing with the internal demons, but the obvious external stuff too. Yeah. And I don't know how, and if that doesn't, you know, add even more, I don't want to say tension, but stress, then I don't know what else does, because it's hard to do that when there's all those stresses and they, as your teammates and your coaches, can only see some of it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, also that, you know, we're all people and we sense things. You know, the second year my coach was asking me, you know, you're very different than you were the first year, you're not smiling as much. But I didn't think of it that way, because I was always, you know, like, okay, this is maybe me not playing as well. And, you know, I was always accusing that to be the reason that I'm not so happy here. But maybe there was more something there. And then
you look back on it now and you probably think to yourself, you know, I wasn't playing well because of all of this other stuff I was dealing with.
Yeah, at least it's part of the reason, because I was in good shape, even better shape than I was the first year. But maybe thinking back, if I was mature enough or something, I could have said to my coach, you know, this is the case and this is what I'm dealing with. But it's the same fear as, you know, no matter what level you play on, you know, you're afraid of the reaction and what will happen. So that's why I couldn't talk about it.
Well, at that point, this is, if I remember correctly, this is like 2015, which, again, doesn't feel like that long ago, but it was. At that point, there was nothing, no one to look to.
No.
And it was, it again, Wild West. You have no idea what's going to happen. And in your position, like, I completely understand. And everyone listening can understand why you would absolutely not want to take that chance.
Yeah. Plus also, you know, I was already, you know, thinking of my next move, like, where am I going to play next? And, you know, is it time for me to turn professional? And if I say something, you know, obviously people in Finland will know about it. And how will that affect? So, you know, all these question marks in your head.
Oh, absolutely. And then you do go back to Finland and play professionally for a couple of years. And at that point, you're a pro. You're now making money playing hockey, which not many people get to do. But obviously, the feelings don't go away. Was it harder then than it was when you were even in junior to do this?
I would say at that time, I was having sort of call it good life in the sense that I was doing what I always wanted to do, as you said, you know, playing professional. And that was one of my dreams. So, you know, one could say that I was living my dream, but, you know, that was those were the years when also my relationship got more serious, and then I had two lives. So, but I also had my closest friends that I was able to, I don't like to use the word come out to, but, you know, I was able to be with them as myself, and they also knew about Rolf, so that made it a lot easier. But still, career-wise, I was always thinking that how will this environment react if I would talk openly about it? So
so who were the first people you told?
Well, obviously my family, and then, you know, my closest friends around me. So
and what were those discussions like? Because for everyone, when you tell them the first time, you're obviously very, very nervous. I was, we all are.
Yeah.
Do you have any stories from that time of their reactions, of moments when you started coming out to people?
Well, it was, what to say, a lot of, you know, obviously media has its own role in how they show gay people in medias, and it's usually represented as very feminine, at least in Finland.
So, oh no, that's also how it's done in North America.
I still get a lot of comments, you know, you're not a typical gay man. And I always answer that, you know, there is no such thing. It's just that, you know, what they show on TV, and that's different.
Finland isn't really all that different from North America then. Some of us think it is. It might not be.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously very touching moment with my mom, because I told her that I was in love with someone, and he's a man, and that man happens to be a lot older than me. And then she was just, you know, we were laying in bed and talking about life for many hours. So that was very nice. And my friends were just like, you know, okay, you're still the same guy for us. And actually nothing negative came out of it. I would say more positive things. And if something I only got closer with the people close to me. So for people that are, let's say, in the closet, call it, I always try to tell them that just find that first person you feel like you can tell them or tell. And then if that's positive, find the next one, because it's easier said than done, but, you know, that's the way the barrier goes down and makes you feel better. So,
And so you did, if I'm reading the stories right, you did come out to not just your friends, but a few teammates when you were playing. Is that right?
Yeah. But those teammates also were guys that I grew up with.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, call it also close friends. So that was very handy.
Oh, that's convenient.
Yeah.
Finland is not a big country, so you're probably more likely to grow up and then see people, and even in the case of hockey, play with people that you already knew, which makes it easier.
Yeah, obviously.
And so you play in Finland, then you have 1 year in France, and you're not out publicly at that point, but when you're done playing, there's obviously not just this reason, but other reasons. But as you look back on it now, do you think that just the double life was just too taxing at some point to keep going? Or was the love of hockey gone because of all of this?
No, I still play for fun sometimes, and I still love most aspects of the game. You know, like the passes, back door, and sources, and scoring goals. But for me, personally, I feel like the main reason was that I didn't become good enough on the professional level that I wanted to. Maybe I was too soon to give up, call it. But there is always, you know, the financial side also. So I felt like for me, it's time now to move on and figure out what else life has to give me. So I would say it was a combination of things, not only that I was gay and I couldn't be myself. So I would say it was a combination of many things, and it wasn't a decision I made in one day. It was more like I was thinking about it for a long time, and then I thought now it's the right time.
Do you think now, with the benefit of hindsight and being out publicly for as long as you have, and the experiences, which we'll get into a little bit, do you think that you, I mean, the world was different back then, but do you think that you could have kept going even a little longer if you were able to be out and play at the same time?
Yeah, for sure. I had some, you know, contract offers, and you never know how the year is going to go. So, but I'm always thinking how long I could have gone not being open about myself, if I would have come out the next season, the season after, or if I would have been able to do it at all. I don't know. But having this sort of mental freedom, I feel like probably would have made it at least easier for me. But how it would have showed on the ice, I don't know, and I don't really want to speculate with that. But take Luke, for example. You know, I've been glad to follow his story, and you know, obviously seems to be quite happy being out and getting quite a lot of support from the hockey community. So it's great to see.
Well, we're going to talk about that a little later too. There's more I want to get to into that, but I want to start to ask you about coming out publicly, because that's another step. To come out to friends and family is one thing, but to do it publicly is another. What was the push for you to come out publicly and to do it the way you did it? Because as you said, at that point, there's just not many in hockey that are out. At that point, I'm trying to remember, it wouldn't have been many, if any, I don't think, other than one or two. So what was the push to do it? And certainly there weren't anybody in Finland that had done it. There were Finnish athletes that were out, but no one in hockey. So what was the push to do that publicly?
Actually, you know, it was this time of social media wasn't as big as it is now, but, you know, I was thinking, and at that time I was already out of hockey. So then I was thinking, you know, I don't always want to explain it to people when I meet new people on the street that are sort of in my life circle, but they're not my close friends. So then I thought, okay, I will do this post on Instagram, and the people in my life will see it, and then they know the story. And then somebody in Finland working for this communication companies noticed and asked me if I wanted to make it more public. And I was thinking about it for a long time, because, you know, it's always two sides when you go public. There's the publicity, and but then I decided it's more of a good thing than bad, and I can help a lot of people. So yeah, that's how it happened.
And what was it like for you? You're getting interviewed by everybody. Hockey players are not ones to like to talk about themselves. I'm assuming that's also the same in Finland. So what was it like to talk about your story publicly in that way? Because you're only just starting to talk about this generally with the people that are close to you, and now everybody is going to know.
You know, media can write what they write, but I can always choose the interviews I want to do. So in that sense, it's not that, how to say it, it's just that I was always very careful with what I say about my relationship and stuff like that, because I also want to keep my life private to a certain point. And media always tries to find things that they could make a headline about. So yeah, but the good thing is, you know, you can always say no, I don't want to do this interview, and yeah, then it's their problem, not mine.
Well, it's different when you're interviewed by somebody, you know, because most sports journalists, I have to say, they're quite straight. You know, there's just not a lot of experience there in asking about, you know, these questions. But in the case of this, you're talking with somebody who understands what you're going through. And I think that those experiences, particularly in the sport that we care about, is quite important, because there's just not enough people who can say this is what they're going through. And to understand, like, you can get sympathy to tell that story, but the empathy, the lived experience is just different. Yeah. And so,
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So what was the reaction from the hockey world in Finland to you telling your story?
Well, not a big reaction from the, call it, hockey world. No, our dog is going crazy. But what to say? There were some players that I played with who sort of supported me. But if you take, for example, the Liga, the biggest we have here, or the Hockey Federation, there was no reaction. And that was sort of what I was hoping for, that, you know, they would start to see that there is something that we don't do enough to make these players feel comfortable. And until today, I'm, you know, tried to make some, call it, noise to make them wake up, or I don't know how to say it, but
you're trying to do for the Liga what other people I know are trying to do over here. And yeah. It's difficult because it's hockey.
Ooh.
That's what you're trying to say.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, small things, like you can start with the pride flag on a pride month, and then you can take the next step, you can start to educate people about these things, and then you can start, you know, inviting minorities to your games, and, you know, say that this is a safe place to watch hockey, and, you know, then, you know, that's how you build a community. And I know that there's a lot of things being yelled at in the stands and stuff like that, but in the end, I feel like it's a great sport, and if you like to watch it, it can be a great experience for anyone.
So I want to talk also about some of the things you've done. As we say, this is the part where we get to mostly in Finnish stuff, but I've been able to see some of it, and it looks really cool, even if I can't understand what you're saying. You've written a book, again, all in Finnish, but what is that like, writing a book about your story?
So yes, the book, it was a very good experience in the sense that, you know, I got to think about things from a different perspective and more deeply. So that was, I felt like it was very good for my head also. But, you know, we tried to make it a book that's not only my story. You know, we interviewed people from the hockey world and what they think about it and what they see that should be done and so on. So I think it became a good one. And yeah, I know that a lot of people have asked when you're going to translate it into English. So we will see.
I would like to read it if it's translated into English. Unfortunately, I can't go down to Florida to cover the Panthers and ask the Finnish players to translate it for me, even though that would be nice. But yeah. It seems like those are stories I think people want to read about, because I've seen plenty of books. I mean, almost everyone I've seen, you know, writes a book about this, and they're all really touching, because though the stories have similar, I don't want to say plot lines, because that's not true, but similar beats, similar aspects to every coming out story, every one of them is different, and yours being very unique because there aren't many out athletes in Finland. So I think that's a story that I desperately want to see. Did you learn anything about yourself writing that book that you didn't otherwise recognize before doing it?
What to say? Maybe that I had quite a lot of things I wanted to say. But it's always, you know, the book came out more than a year ago. But now that I'm a little bit older, I feel like now I would have maybe even more to say. Yeah, so I'm satisfied, but you know, maybe now I would add some things, but there is nothing that I would take away from the book. So
what do you think you'd add?
Maybe more on the educational side, like concrete things that the hockey community could do. As I maybe mentioned before, in terms of getting minorities more in the stands, and just market the sport in a wider perspective.
Finland is no different than North America. It's amazing. Everything you're saying could be said about the NHL and hockey here, and it's being said about hockey in Finland too. It's remarkable. You also have worked, and I've seen this too, with EA Sports in Finland. Now, this is something that I don't think would happen in North America for a variety of different reasons that I don't think we need to get into. But explain that, because if they follow you on Instagram, which I do, you'll see this. But we'll talk about this for a second, because this is really cool.
Yeah, it's probably one of the coolest social media, call it collaborations, that I've done. It actually all goes down to one person. He worked for EA Sports, and back in the days when I was playing for my junior team, he was the marketing manager for the men's team. And then we got to know each other a little bit, but then years went on, and you know, my story came out, and he worked for different companies, and now he's the marketing manager for EA Sports in Europe. And then he just sent me a message that he would like to do something with me in terms of with the video games. And then we started to think about the concept and so on. And we came up with good ideas. And then we, you've probably seen the video that we made, became pretty good one. And
I think this one actually had English subtitles, so it helped.
Yeah. And then and then we moved on for the next year, and I actually got to collect the team, and we took part in this tournament. It's called Save Pond Hockey. So obviously we're bringing together two very important topics, you know, the climate change and the minorities in hockey. So it's been very cool. And then also they put the Pride jersey.
I had to mention these jerseys, because I think if you've seen, because I believe Helsinki Pride was over the weekend, and the jersey's really cool.
Yeah, they're cool. And
see what you're banning, NHL, because of stupidity. You're banning stuff like this.
Yeah, but going a little bit back on that, I also wanted to say what I didn't say earlier about NHL, because you know, 95% of the players probably want to wear the jersey or do whatever. But at the same time, you know, we have, for example, Russian players in the league, and we also have to try to understand them and, you know, what's going on in their home country and how they need to protect themselves. So I'm not judging a Russian player who doesn't want to wear a jersey and blames it on religion or whatever, but you know, the reason might be something totally different. So we don't really know what's going on in their life and in their home country. So
I could talk to you a little about that one off the air. It's complicated. The homophobes, the people who have actually done it because they're homophobes, I got no sympathy for them. But yeah. And some of them were legitimately just homophobia, but that's a complicated story. And for the 90, and as I said, it's hard to not celebrate, you know, the 95%, but unfortunately they stick out like a sore thumb. And well, unless they have decided to, like one Eric Stahl, embarrass themselves in front of everybody by saying, I never wore a Pride jersey, when in fact you did. What else are we supposed to do? This is the story here. But I have to ask this too. What about the people you heard from after you came out publicly? And I'm talking about just people you heard from you never thought you'd hear from, saying congratulations or whatever it was. Did you hear from anybody where you went, wow, I can't believe I heard from that person?
Yeah, there are quite a few, but to to bring up maybe some old coaches were apologizing, you know, some of the language that they might have used, you know, because it's very common that in the locker room you might call your opponent a group of gays or stuff like that. And it's sort of, you know, it's in that sense it's like normal. And thinking back, I didn't even remember that, but like, you know, it's cool that they reached out to me and said, you know, I apologize and I've grown and I wouldn't do it anymore. So things like that, they're sort of touching. And it's always also, you know, people who are closeted, no matter if they're professional athletes or young teenagers or whatever, and they feel like, you know, I'm not a therapist, so I'm not telling them, you know, how they should live their life. But it's always good that, you know, they can either relate to my story, because then I'm the person that I didn't have when I was growing up. So that's always surprising, but feels nice.
Oh, that's great. That's one of the best feelings. Did you hear from any former teammates that surprised you?
Not that I was surprised, but a lot of ex-teammates sent me messages. So,
that had to make you feel pretty good.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, until today, you know, it's people that I haven't seen after quitting. And if I see them, they might mention it, and it still feels nice. And, also from, my teammates, from France or from Canada, you know, that story, went to their ears as well, and you know, they reached out and sent me a message.
So we brought up Luke Prokop earlier, and again, I can, you know, we could make this entire show about that, but when you saw that, because this is one of those rare times where you can get the perspective of somebody who has already been out before in hockey when they see that story, because there aren't many of them. When you saw that, and you've obviously followed him since, and what he's been doing, what was that like for you?
I was very proud of him. My first thought was, you know, it's too bad, sort of, that he's still in the junior league, because, you know, as I said, you know, nobody knows how the professional leagues are going to react and how it's going to be. And you're still, how to say it, you're good, but you're not there yet. So I was, how to say it, I was...
You were excited.
Yeah, excited, but I'm also, you know, because I would have thought that someone would do it if they have made it, you know. But
you didn't think that somebody was going to do it before they had, you know, made it to the league. You were surprised that here's this junior kid who was just drafted a year ago.
Yeah. So then I sort of, I wouldn't say that he took a risk, or obviously, you know, it's been tough for him mentally, so he had to do it. But when I came out after my career, I didn't expect that somebody would do it at that age. Still playing junior, I was expecting someone who's, you know, professional, playing professional somewhere, as we have seen in other sports, and doing it that way. But I was very happy for him, and I really hope that he's going to do well.
Do you see something of yourself in there, as in like, man, or I wish that could have been me, or, you know, would I have done it this way if I had the chance?
No, not really. You know, we all have our own paths, and I don't really compare myself to others, except probably on the ice back in the days. But in terms of this topic, I never had thoughts like that. Like, if I
you just enjoy seeing somebody else being able to do this without thinking about, you know, because it's natural to think about, you know, what could we have done differently when you see something like this.
Yes.
But in your case, you just wanted to enjoy watching somebody else.
Yes.
Enjoy that. And I take you're enjoying it.
Yeah, of course.
And I now want to ask, as we start to wrap this up, a little bit about, you know, what you would do if you had the ability, to run, you know, all of the education stuff for the league or whatever it is, you know, what would you do? What would you, change, if you had the ability to make these decisions unilaterally, what would you want these people to do in order to promote inclusion, in order to make the sport better? Because some of it might have changed organically because the world has changed. But what would you change if you could, if you had the ability to? And what are you trying to work towards changing?
Well, obviously, as you said, it's organically changing because, you know, younger generation is coming up and they don't maybe accept the same rules as before or the same attitudes. And that can be seen in other work life as well. But when it comes to sports, I actually talked about this on social media recently. I've been asked a lot, why do we still have pride and so on? So for example, for sports organizations, no matter if it's the Olympic Federation or whatever you have in your country, but if, let's say, they built a team from different athletes and they came to the pride and show that we support this, you know, for sure that would be a great message to be sent out there, you know, for all those younger athletes that are coming up, that, you know, this is actually they're showing respect to the community and they want to make a change. So that would be one good thing, at least hasn't happened here in Finland. And then obviously, because for a lot of people, especially now with social media, there are a lot of terms and, you know, something that might seem very, how to say it, complicated, that, you know, it's very easily that you might say something wrong. But I always feel like if you're putting the effort to learn, that minorities will more appreciate the fact that you try to learn than, you know, than if you don't do anything about it. So it's not that difficult to ask someone who's professional in that area to come and talk to your organization and say, you know, what does equality mean? What are the values in it? And also, what's the word? Inclusion and, you know, stuff like that. It's not that difficult to ask someone to come and speak to your organization. And also,
you would hope it's easier in Finland than you are seeing some pushback to it over here. I mean, the pushback over here is really dumb and stupid, but, you know.
Yeah.
I would hope you have it easier than some people are having it here right now.
Yeah. And yeah.
And what about hockey specifically?
Well, I think the same thing goes for hockey, you know. It's but also it's tough in a way, because this is also we take a touch on in my book, you know, because it's hockey and why this environment that we have in hockey sort of forms itself. It's obviously, it's not a cheap sport. So let's say compared to soccer in a lot of other countries, you can just take a ball and go play. But with hockey, you know, you need a team and you need the equipment, and then, you know, you need money. So it's the same when you go to the locker room when you're 5 years old. You're basically surrounded by people coming from, I wouldn't say rich families, but, you know, from the people that have maybe a little bit more money. And then it's not very often you see a person with color or with some other ethnicity, or how do you say the word?
Different background
in the locker room. So that already is sort of creating a society that's not very multicultural. So therefore, I see that part is sort of hard to change, because how do you make the sport cheaper? That's another story.
It's possible, but they have to be willing to do it.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, and as I've always said to you know, my friends that are either gay or whatever, that I want to bring you to a hockey game, and no matter what you hear, I also want you to try to understand the game and the beauty of it, because I've met my best friends through that sport, and it has a lot of good attributes. So I also want minorities to, you know, not to judge the sport and the reputation it maybe has as a very masculine and rough language sport. I also want the minorities to be able to give that sport a chance and either to go try to play it or you know, to go watch the game and maybe focus on the positive sides.
Well, I think you can take them. It's Tapara. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, because that's yeah. That's important. You take them to one of that new arena. Yeah, that looks pretty cool.
Yeah, it's I've been there a couple of times, and it's obviously the best.
I think that they had the was it this year or last, whatever year, the one where the Avs and Blue Jackets played in Finland. I think it was. Well, I don't remember what year it was, but that looked cool. And then, you know, I've seen some the World Championships were there. Look cool. Looks yeah, fun.
It's especially.
I don't know how anybody could not go to one of those games and not go, wow, that's really cool. I want to be a part of that.
Yeah. It's and also when we, you know, it's funny, no matter what your political opinion or who you support in Finland, when it's the World Championships, you know, the people come together and they go and they support Finland. So that's
the other thing about the hockey that you see. It's just that, I mean, it's different because we're always thinking over here it's best on best. You know, we don't think about the worlds in the same way. But for you guys, I mean, it's a really big deal.
Yeah, it's,
and the World Juniors too. And I mean, that's obviously Canada's thing, but like that's also become a bigger deal now. Just the support for the national teams, it's just. It rocks. And then again, we can't have the Olympics, and it's annoying me because we should, because we missed all this good best on best stuff. And I'll end with this, and it's been incredible to have you here. Other than the one lesson we've learned, which is Finland is not really any different than North America when it comes to hockey. You're talking to people who reach out to you, closeted in hockey, whatever, and they ask you advice. What's your advice to them?
Are we talking about, you know, like
your closet? Let's just do closeted hockey players or whoever, you know, in the sport, you know, let's say closeted players first, and then the people who want to make the sport better, the allies.
Yeah.
What do you tell them?
I always say to people or players who are in the closet, you know, find that first person, no matter if it's in your family or if it's, therapist or whatever, talk to someone that will make you feel better, because if you're alone with your thoughts, you will never sort of find solution to anything, and then you will always find your head banging the wall if you go to the acting role, that you take a wife and you make a family. I don't want to make that sound like a bad thing, but you know, it's like then you're not yourself and you have this one life that's maybe it will be heavy for you. So then if you find someone that you can talk to, that might, you know, make the barrier a little lower. And then, as I said, you know, you find the next one, and then you realize that okay, these people are reacting positively, maybe, you know, maybe the whole community will react positively. And then, you know, I've said the culture doesn't change if we don't, you know, show that we have actually players who are or belongs to the minorities. You know, it's if they're, you know, still people thinking that, you know, this is not a sport where you can make it as a gay man, for example, then, you know, we just have to prove them wrong, and that doesn't happen by itself. You know, we have to you know, the world has changed because people have come out publicly, and obviously we're not in a society where it's, call it normal or how to say it, accepted fully yet. So we still need some brave people.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'll end this by saying, where can people find you? Social media, elsewhere.
Social media, I'm more focused on on Instagram. I also have TikTok, but you know, that's just like a fun stuff. I have my email. She found me on Instagram, and yeah.
I tried to message you on Instagram to do this, and that didn't quite work out. So then I tried email, and that worked. You know, it happens. But it's your name. I think it's your name on Instagram. It's better you're not on Twitter now for your sake.
Especially with you know, recently I've gotten into politics, and you know, it's I don't want to go.
Well, I don't think it's good to be on Twitter for any reasons right now. Maybe blue sky. Yanni, it's been a pleasure. Ditos.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.